Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this special edition of the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the Green Nonprofit Show. You know going green is the right thing to do for the environment and your organization, but budgets are tight and knowing how to get started can be a mystery. This show provides the practical advice on going green you and your colleagues need. While each week the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart Radio Show provides advice on fundraising, board development, and social media, this special edition is all about helping you go green on a nonprofit budget. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, this show draws from experts around the world and his book, The Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, available on Amazon.com and at greennonprofits.org. Guests on the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show, are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofits. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. Remember, just like our weekly show, this is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Just click on radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to this special edition of the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show. This is Friday, January 20th, coming to you live from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Bit of a chilly day and some bad weather on its way. For those of you who are new to the show, as our intro stated, this is a live call-in show. We do invite you to call in and ask questions of our page two expert. As we get to our page two, that means there is a page one. That's page one news. You can also join us over in the chat room. I see someone over in the chat room right now. You can also email me your questions at tedhart@tedhart.com. As always, here on the Nonprofit Coach and here with The Green Show, we always start with page one news. I want to thank all of you who have emailed ideas for The Green Show. In particular, I want to thank Dr. Karen Weber, who is the executive director of the Foundation for a Green Future, who has sent in information, asked us to remind everyone here of the Green Fest in Boston that will be coming up this summer. The Boston Green Fest is organized by the Foundation for a Green Future as the region's largest multicultural environmental festival. The Boston Green Fest celebrates the many ways that we can create a better world by greening our lives and our communities. You can find them at bostongreenfest.org and mark your calendars. They're going to be up in Boston on August 16th through the 18th this year. Next up here on page one news, we want to draw your attention to some wonderful work that is being done up in Bozeman. The nonprofit Greater Yellowstone Coalition has installed one of the largest solar arrays in Bozeman on the roof of its new headquarters. Now, this is one of the largest solar arrays in the city. So we want to congratulate them. In the first year, they project that they will save $4,230 in electric bills. They now have a new 9,000-square-foot space. The nonprofit has been renting a smaller space, so they're very excited about this, and we want to always draw attention to the wonderful work of nonprofit organizations. So continue to send in your articles, your stories, and your success in making your own nonprofit go green. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, we want to remind you of the work of the greennonprofits.org organization. Green Nonprofits certification process is what I specifically want to draw your attention to. It's a comprehensive process of evaluation and change. Each organization that seeks to become certified by Green Nonprofits is required to complete a certification application You can do that either online or by downloading the application. They do ask that you not print it, obviously be environmentally sensitive, because you can fill out the application even if you download it and then email it in rather than mailing it in for review. While each charity is different, each charity will earn 100 points by completing the required and elective requirements. Each path to certification is unique to each organization. This is not a cookie-cutter approach. You take all of the various options and you determine what is possible, what is best for your organization. By becoming certified, your organization, when combined with the efforts of others, will make a significant difference to help our environment. It's important that nonprofits join with for-profits and individuals who are looking to go green, and this gives you an opportunity to show your donors and supporters that your organization is part of the solution in helping grow or combating the global environmental crisis. Check that out at greennonprofits.org. Click on certification. Next up here on page one comes to us from Claire Maloney, who is the lead green associate at Cornell University. Last year, Duke University announced that it was awaiting LEED certification for its Cohen Residence Hall. The certification would make Duke's 23rd LEED certified building. Duke's commitment to LEED is part of its climate action plan. What's really significant about this is that they are part of the American College and University President's climate commitment that has 672 signatories as of the end of last year. This commitment requires signatories to take tangible action to reducing greenhouse gases. One suggested action is to establish a policy that all new campus construction will be built using LEED, at least silver standard or equivalent. Now, our position for nonprofit organizations is we're not looking to suggest that you have to spend a lot of money to become a green organization. Certainly, if you have the funds to be able to have your buildings certified using the LEED standard, that's terrific. But if you can't, again, we draw your attention to the Green Nonprofit Certification Program that is principally about how you operate your organization, making significant changes across the board that add up to helping your organization show its serious commitment to the green nonprofit sector. That's what we have on page one today. We've got an excellent page two guest, so I want to make sure that we give her lots of time today to help us understand how we can use the grants process to green our organizations and how we can green our nonprofits. So let's head right on over to page two. On this very special edition of the Nonprofit Coach, this is the Green Show, and our page two expert today is Dana Goldstein, who is the founder of Philantech, which develops web-based applications for nonprofit sector and has worked for venture philanthropies, including Ashoka and the Blue Ridge Foundation New York. She has also produced interactive e-learning programs, including the award-winning What is a Leader program for the Harvard Business School's Publishing and Global Education Network. She holds a BA from Williams College and a Master's of Education degree with a concentration in technology from Harvard University. She serves on the board of directors for JustGive.org and is what was named one of Business Week's 25 most promising social entrepreneurs. Welcome to the Nonprofit Coach today. And I think I'm still not getting your first name right, Dana Goldstein.
It's Dana, and thank you, Ted. I'm very, very happy.
Why can't I say that right? We even practiced it before the show today. Dana, right?
Dana, yes. Thank you.
Dana. Okay, Dana, thank you for forgiving me in that introduction, and thank you so much for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach, the Green Show. So, Dana, tell us all about the work of Philantech.
So Philantech is a B Corporation. I'm happy to talk about that a little bit, and a company that provides an online tech platform for nonprofits and foundations, for grant makers and grant seekers. What we're really working to do is to help nonprofits use technology well to achieve their missions, so to spend more of their resources on program and service delivery, fewer of their resources on repetitive administration processes. Where that plays out for us is primarily in the grant space. So what our tool does for both grant makers and grant seekers is help them manage all facets of the grant administration process and do that in a web-based way so there's less paper production. I'm happy to walk through what the different facets of that are. But essentially, we have a platform that connects nonprofits and their funders, or funders and their grantees, it works both ways, to really help reduce the transaction costs of grants administration so that the programs and services that the grants are intended to fund really get more support in the process.
So by way of comparison, help me understand where you fit in the marketplace. Is your service similar to that of MicroEdge?
It is similar to MicroEdge. We differ from MicroEdge in a few ways. One is that all of our tools are completely web-based, and MicroEdge is gradually moving in that direction. And for folks who may be on the line who don't know, MicroEdge is a provider of a grants management system, probably the oldest grants management system around. Those of us who are a little bit newer in the space have built native web-based applications as opposed to installed software. But one of the things that we do that's really, really different is that we provide tools not only for the grant makers, but for the grant seekers as well. And the main problem that we're really working to solve is that the Center for Effective Philanthropy did a study that determined that 13% of every foundation grant dollar is spent on grants administration. So if you look at about $41, $42, $43 billion awarded annually in grants by foundations, that's nearly $6 billion that is being spent on grants administration processes rather than on the programs and services that those grants are intended to fund. By providing tools.
Bottom line, this is also about efficiency and moving the process into a more efficient online space.
Absolutely. So it has impact on the service delivery of the nonprofit organizations. But, you know, MicroEdge is one of the software providers out there. Most foundations are not yet using online grant applications. So a fairly typical process with a foundation, particularly one that hasn't moved online, is they'll have an upcoming deadline for whatever grant process they have. They'll ask nonprofits to submit sometimes only one, but sometimes up to 10 copies of grant proposals. So a lot of nonprofits that are seeking grants are putting together large packets of information and then making 10 copies that they then send to the funder so that the funder can distribute those copies to a review committee or to their board members to aid in their decision-making process. Moving that process online obviously reduces all of that paper production and makes the process more efficient as well, but it's saving a large number of trees in the process.
Okay, and it also provides reporting for after the grant is made?
It does. So grants administration is very much an end-to-end process. It starts when the funder, whether it's a foundation or another type of grant maker, decides or has a pool of money that it wants to award for a given program or in a particular year. Some foundations, as you know, will accept unsolicited proposals. Some won't. But from the moment that the initial contact is made or the initial outreach is made between the funder and the ultimate fundee, that's only the first stage of the process. Once the grant proposal is submitted, it's evaluated. Sometimes there's back and forth. The grant is awarded, and then, as you know, there are reporting requirements that come along with that, sometimes a mid-year report and a year-end report, sometimes less frequent, sometimes more frequent. Our system manages all facets of that, not only for the grant maker, but for the grant seeker as well. So it's essentially two different but related portals. Depending on whether your view is as a grant maker or a grant seeker, you see all of the information that's relevant to your organization. The system helps you not only keep track of deadlines and contact, but actually construct and aggregate all of the information that you need. If you're a grant maker, it's facilitating the online application process, the review process, and then the evaluation process. A lot of grant makers are increasingly thinking about their own effectiveness as grant makers. One of the ways that they can measure that is by collecting information from their grantees to see what sort of impact their grants are having. Our system helps facilitate that process, both in terms of collecting information and reports from grantees, but also then providing some analysis tools to help grantmakers understand their own effectiveness and the impact of their grantmaking.
Now, help us understand the various levels at which moving in this direction, both for nonprofits who are going to receive the grants, but also for the foundations that are utilizing the tools. How does this tie into an overall greening of the operation?
Sure. So there are a couple of key facets of it. The main component in terms of playing into greening operations is in the reduction of paper production, as I mentioned, you know, having multiple copies that are submitted to funders, but also then as proposals are submitted, as grants are awarded, both parties, both the grant maker and the grant seeker, are keeping paper copies of all of these files. By moving the whole process online, everything is in electronic form. It both creates some institutional memory for the organization, but it also means that there just isn't a need to produce all of these paper copies and the multiple paper copies. It also facilitates having meetings and having collaboration that can happen virtually as people are able to log into a singular system and get the same view of information. Things like review committee meetings can happen remotely, so people don't have to drive or fly across the country if they're, you know, trustees of family foundations to be in the same place to have a review committee meeting. They can be looking at the same set of information online. They can submit their own reviews online. So it really streamlines not only it streamlines the process, but also reduces the obviously the paper production, but it reduces the carbon footprint in terms of reduced travel as well. And just sort of funny anecdotal story, I've actually heard this a number of times from grant makers that we've worked with as they're moving their processes online. When they have a deadline for a grant proposal that's, say, 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, a lot of grant makers have had this experience of having a potential applicant realize the day of that they want to submit a grant proposal. They will put the proposal together but realize that they just don't have enough time to put it in the U.S. mail and have it arrive in time for the 5 o'clock deadline. So they'll jump in their car, sometimes from several states away, and hand deliver the proposal to the grant maker. With an online process, you know, the submission process is virtually instantaneous, so meeting those deadlines can be a little bit easier if you're a nonprofit who tends to leave things for the last minute, but it also helps reduce the carbon footprint, both in terms of those kind of...
Well, not that anybody would ever leave something like that to the last minute.
Of course not. That was completely hypothetical and certainly wouldn't apply
really
to anybody who may be listening.
So what about past documents? What about all of the paper and all of the archiving of information? Does this also provide for creating, you know, scannable copies and creating a more complete record, or is this sort of starts from the day that you start using it?
It does provide that record as well. Obviously, the organization would need to have scanning capability. You know, if you have paper copies that go back a number of years, as long as they're...
I mean, most
of them,
I mean, that's
available.
Pretty easy technology. So if they able to scan things into PDF documents, they can attach them to a record?
They can, and then really have the complete history built into the system. It's one of the things that we're finding increasingly is that there's actually a lot of turnover in development departments at nonprofits. So having those types of historical records stored in a centralized online format helps to create some institutional memory for the organization as well. So we definitely recommend that kind of backfilling of information once the system's up and running.
That's terrific. So help us understand one of the other important aspects of working with online services and documentation is security. So what about the security of these systems?
Absolutely. You know, as with any web-based system, there are some industry standards around having security certificates, having good password protections, never doing things like emailing passwords, that variety of things. So we meet industry standards around all the, you know, kind of relevant security measures. As always, it's important not to do things like share passwords with other people. But the information that is in our system, like with any software as a service kind of solution, if you think about something like Salesforce.com or a number of other software as a solution providers out there, it's a centralized website and a centralized resource but each information, each organization's information is segmented so that only the organization only has access to its own information. No other organizations have access to that information.
But what about the warehousing of information? And because this is totally in the cloud. This is not resident software that's being hosted at the site.
That's right. It is completely in the cloud. One of the upsides there is that there's nothing to maintain on any computers or any servers at the organization. And you know, we have a secure environment where our servers are located. We have routine backups. We have failover systems. So if anything goes horribly, horribly wrong, and I'm knocking wood here, but if something were to go horribly, horribly wrong, we have protections in place to ensure against the loss of data. That's not always true, particularly for smaller nonprofits that you know have some IT infrastructure in place but may not have a ton of IT infrastructure in place.
You're talking about here is sort of disaster planning, right? Disaster and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the standards that, regardless of whether or not your service was used or another, one of the standards that should be measured is the extent of that backup and disaster and recovery plan.
Absolutely.
Now, does your service provide multiple backup, or are you backing up to one location?
We are backing up to two different geographic locations. So you know, we've gone through multiple scenarios and imagined what would happen if there were, you know, X natural disaster in one location. So we're actually, and I think probably most tech providers do this, we have backups in multiple locations and servers.
And that's becoming more of a standard post-Katrina, isn't it? There were a number of companies that had backup sites, but sadly they were all in the same state.
Yes. So I think there are two things that have emerged on that front from Katrina. One is exactly as you say, having backup locations that are in a different physical location, but also just generally as a practice for nonprofits as well as for businesses, having offsite storage. So even if you're storing data locally, if you're not working with us or working with one of the other providers of an online grants management solution, if all of your files are in some file cabinet in your office and something happens to your office, there's no recovering from that. So electronic copies of documents, storing them off-site, having a backup tape that's stored off-site, you know, even if you're not working with a company that's providing services in the cloud, using off-site storage and off-site backups and off-site recovery mechanisms is a really good practice.
And in doing that, what's the responsibility of the charity to be a party to that, or is all of that automatic?
In terms of our software?
Yeah, specifically to your platform, but I want to make sure that all of our answers today are also speaking to industry standards, which, you know, hopefully you are exhibiting that, so it may be a conversation about your company, but are those kinds of services expected to be automatic, or is there a lot of work on the part of the charity to actually affect that?
Those varieties of services are expected to be automatic for companies that are providing hosted solutions to nonprofits. I would say that the onus on the nonprofits is to make sure that those practices are in place when you're evaluating a provider or even with companies that you're already working with. The other onus on the nonprofits is for whatever information isn't being stored, and whether it's grant information, donor information, you know, mailing lists, anything else, accounting records, whatever information isn't being stored with a third-party provider, making sure that you do have copies and ability to access that information if you're not able to access your office for some reason.
Right. Now, what kind of accounting services are typically built into a program like this, or is this just the grant management so there isn't funds management in addition to the grant, the actual sort of paper application management?
That varies from provider to provider. In terms of what we provide, We're not an accounting package. We do provide the ability to convey financial information. So we did some research with the Irwin Institute a number of years ago about what information is typically conveyed between a funder and a fundee or an applicant in the application and reporting processes, and pretty much inevitably budgetary information, an organization budget, program budget is requested by the funder. So we have good tools for conveying that information. Typically, nonprofits are using some third-party accounting software, sometimes using Excel sheets, depending on the size and complexity of the organization. One thing that we do have on the finance front is we've actually built a tool in to our GrantMaker product that enables foundations that request financial statements from their applicants to do a fairly in-depth analysis of the financial health and stability of their organization. So we teamed up with a professor who was at Harvard at the time to build a tool that provides a really in-depth look at the organization's not only their funding sources, but their liquidity, their debt servicing ability, a lot of things that funders want to know about nonprofit organizations to identify how well they're performing financially, how stable they are financially. And ideally, funders use this as an opportunity to identify where some of their grantees may need some additional support if they look like they may be getting in trouble or if they could use some technical assistance.
And you can see that data over time, depending on how often that organization is applying for a grant.
Yes, absolutely.
And in other words, it keeps the historical information as well.
It does, and funders can also use that to request updates. So the information transaction in the system happens at the front end of the process, and this is true with all of the all grants management solutions, that the application process is one touch point between the funder and the grantee. The reporting process, which can happen once over the life of a grantor, can happen twice or can happen many more times, is another touch point and a great opportunity. Almost everything that happens in a report harkens back to what the nonprofit said in the proposal. So we're requesting funds to do X, Y, and Z. We're looking for this amount of money. The reporting that happens on a 6-month and 12-month basis, or however frequently each individual funder does it, is largely asking the nonprofit, well, you said you were going to do this. How's it going? So there are multiple opportunities for funders to be able to collect that information from their applicants and view it over time.
And that's customizable to the particular interests of the funding source.
It is. So what our system does, and each foundation does things slightly differently. There's a saying among folks who work with foundations, if you've met one foundation, you've met one foundation. So each foundation does like to do things slightly differently. We can customize the application process, the reporting process, as do most grants management systems, to meet the individual needs of the particular funder. One of the things that we've done that's a little bit different is we understand from the nonprofit's perspective, from the applicant's perspective, that funders are frequently actually asking for very similar information. So we've created a mechanism in the technology. If I'm a development director at a nonprofit and I'm working on a grant application, if I see a question and I think, you know what, another funder has asked me this question before, I've answered it before, I can click a button in the system that says find similar questions. I can see which of my funders have asked me that question before or asked me something that's similar to that question before. I can see how I've answered that question, and if that response is appropriate for that funder, I can click a button and automatically fill in that field. So that's part of how we're reducing the transaction cost, just reducing some of the facets of the application process that are a little bit repetitive for nonprofits, but at the same time meeting the specific needs of each individual funder that we work with.
I want to thank you very much for that, and we're going to take just a very quick break, and then we'll be right back. When we come back, what I wanted to ask you to help our audience understand is what is a B corporation. We'll be right back. Today we want to draw your attention to the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green. This has been called the definitive and practical go-to resource guide to help charities around the world become more green. The Nonprofit Guide to Going Green is your comprehensive learning tool to guide nonprofits and NGOs towards becoming greener. A desktop reference for any charitable organization to become greener, this essential book gives your organization the support it needs to take proactive steps to protect the environment while fulfilling your mission. It provides information on topics from purchasing to travel to how to green your office. Timely and clearly written, with contributions from experts around the world, the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green leads the way in helping charities in all countries meet this challenge. You can find the book at greennonprofits.org or amazon.com, and that's the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green. We're going to head right back over to the Nonprofit Coach, the special edition of The Green Show. In the past, we've had shows specifically talking about the new concept of what is a B corporation. Specifically, your firm is a B corporation. Could you give us a little bit of information for those that have maybe missed the earlier podcast, the earlier show on what is a B corporation?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And Philantec is really proud to be a B corporation. B corporations are an emerging standard for certifying for-profit businesses that are socially and environmentally responsible. You know, there are a lot of companies out there that say that they're good companies, but there's a fair bit of greenwashing around that. Organizations that say there's good companies, they're good companies, and they do good green environment.
Well, let me stop you right there, only because you used a phrase that I want to make sure everybody understands. What is greenwashing?
So greenwashing is essentially the notion of saying that something is green and appealing to the desires of consumers who are looking for green products, but sort of painting with a broad enough brush that it doesn't ultimately have any real meaning. So greenwashing has just sort of become a very broad term, or saying that things are green. It has sort of lost meaning without having any sort of accountability, any way of really checking that an organization, whether it's a for-profit or a nonprofit, really is meeting standards and actually putting good practices in place.
It's sort of the opposite of if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck. In fact, if something looks green, sometimes it might not be green. If it looks green or sounds green, you really need to make sure that it is certified and that the actual processes are in place rather than just someone who has slapped on "we're green."
Absolutely. So I sort of have the image in my mind of, you know, a rabbit that's wearing a duck bill. You know, the fact that it looks like a duck to some degree doesn't actually mean it is necessarily a duck.
Right, exactly. Just for those of you who are listening today, we are going to talk a little bit about what is a B corporation, but I did want to let everyone know that just about a year ago, interestingly enough, on February 8th, Clint O'Brien was here on the Nonprofit Coach. He's the Vice President of Business Development at CARE2. Our topic was what is a B Corporation. That was on February 8th. You can find that in the archives at tedhart.com. Click on radio, and you'll be pleased to know that it is one of the most popular podcasts on the Nonprofit Coach. So tell us, what is a B Corporation? Then I'd like to ask you to sort of reflect on why would a show like that, a topic like that, be one of our highest rated?
Great. So B corporations are for-profit businesses that are certified as socially and environmentally responsible businesses. They're certified by an organization that is a nonprofit itself that is based in Pennsylvania called B Lab. There's a growing community of B corporations. The process of becoming a certified B corporation is actually, I think, similar to the Green Nonprofit Certification process. There is an assessment tool that was developed over a number of years and developed with a lot of input from leaders in the fields of both social and environmental responsibility to ensure that that for-profit organizations that are going through the certification process are actually putting into place good practices in terms of their social responsibility, but also their environmental responsibility. Some of the green practices that are assessed in the process are things like recycling and use of recycled materials, local sourcing to reduce the carbon footprint, other things to reduce carbon footprints like policies to reduce corporate travel, so things that we do a lot here at Philantech. We do a lot of web-based meetings rather than doing face-to-face meetings so that we're not flying all over the country or driving all over the country. Other things that are assessed are things like telecommuting and teleworking practices. And a lot of these things, I think, are similar policies and practices to what nonprofits can put in place in greening their organizations. For for-profits that pass the certification process, they then become a B Corporation. So we're able to, we as a for-profit are able to say, we say that we're a nice for-profit, but there's this third-party vetting process that has said, not only do we just say that we have these good practices in place, they've assessed that we do have those practices in place. And B Corporation, B Lab, actually has a review process every 2 years. They review, I forget if it's 5 to 10% of the organizations that they've certified to really make sure that, you know, everything that you're saying you're doing is actually something that you're doing. So it's a way to know that any company that's gone through the certification process really does have good social and environmental practices in place.
And doesn't it change sort of the bottom line not being the bottom line in terms of investors and the expectations of a corporation? It actually sets forth in your charter that being a B Corporation or a benefit corporation is different in terms of the bottom line outcomes.
It does, and we draw a distinction between B Corporations and benefit corporations, and this goes a little bit outside my area of expertise, but B Corporations are a certification process. In order to be a certified B Corporation, you, as a for-profit, do have to change your organizing documents to explicitly say that the managers and the operators of the company can and should take into account things beyond the financial bottom line in terms of thinking about social and environmental responsibility. Taking that one step further, Maryland was actually the first state to pass benefit corporation legislation. Virginia is another, New Jersey is a third. There are a couple of others as well that are actually creating new types of companies that are benefit corporations. Benefit corporations, as recognized by those state laws, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't even play one on TV. I won't pretend to play one on the radio. But benefit corporations that are structured in those states actually have to report on their social and environmental outcomes to the state on an annual basis. And it's really protection for those business owners who want to be socially and environmentally responsible for them to be able to, in a sense, push back against any investors who say, you know, it's really only about maximizing the financial bottom line. Benefit corporation legislation gives business owners who are socially and environmentally responsible the protection to be able to say, well, look, we're a benefit corporation, so yes, we're trying to maximize our financial returns, but we're not doing it at the cost of our social and environmental returns, and in fact, we can actually prioritize the social and environmental returns as well.
I think that is an important distinction, and it does say something more and something different about the companies that we all do business with. My understanding is that there's 517 B Corporations now covering over 60 different industries, so it certainly is a certification process that is growing in its utilization and its importance.
Absolutely, and the passing of state-level benefits corporation legislation is also growing. As I'm thinking about it, California actually I think is the most recent state to pass the benefit corporation legislation, and a company that a lot of folks may have heard of, Patagonia, is one of the first corporations in California to jump on being a benefit corporation, and I think from their perspective, you know, they're well known as a socially and environmentally responsible company. And to say we're actually structuring ourselves to really build that social and environmental responsibility into our corporate structure as well as into our ethos and our corporate DNA is a huge statement. And I think it's an interesting trend in the social space. I think, you know, you asked why the program with Clint O'Brien from CARE 2 about B Corporations may be one of the most popular, and I find it fascinating that it is. I think it's a sign that there's sort of an increasing, blurring or at least closeness of the for-profit and the nonprofit worlds, which I think is a wonderful thing. From the for-profit business perspective, you know, for-profit businesses historically have only been about making money. There's a cost to that. There's frequently a social and environmental cost to that. The emergence of things like B Corporations, like L3Cs, like other forms of socially and environmentally responsible companies is a way for people who want to structure their businesses as for-profits for whatever reason to say, we're not just about making money. Sure, we want to make money. We have shareholders who want us to make money. But we are really dedicated to being a mission-driven organization as well as a financial bottom line-driven organization.
What does become the bottom line with a company such as yours? And before I let it get away that you are maybe being a little bit modest in that not only are you a certified B Corporation, but you're actually a founding B Corporation.
We are. Becoming a B Corporation was pretty much a no-brainer from my perspective. You know, when I founded Philantech, I seriously debated whether it should be a for-profit or a non-profit company. The reason that I started the company and the reason that we build the tools that we build is that we want to help nonprofits be as effective and as efficient as we can be, and we think there are good ways to use technology to do that. So, you know, for us, making tons of money has never been the top priority. You know, I think there are very few people who object to making money, but making money at the expense of doing things that have social and environmental meaning was never something that came to mind for us. So becoming a B Corporation was a way of institutionalizing what we had sort of already institutionalized in terms of the ways that we structured the company, in terms of our mission of really trying to help organizations as much as possible in the nonprofit sector through good uses of technology. So I think there are increasing numbers of companies that are being founded, where the founders are thinking about things in those ways. And I think increasingly consumers want that. They want to know that the companies that they're doing business with are actually doing good things, that particularly in an age where, Lehman Brothers, other banks out there or other organizations out there that have really been motivated purely by making money, there's an expense to that. There's a cost to that I think a lot of people are seeing and feeling very acutely at the moment. So to be able to
sort of
people
are left in the wake of that as opposed to it being a true community benefit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think community benefit is actually a great term. One of the things that B Corporations and L3Cs, and I'm not saying that being certified is the only way to go. There are lots of good companies out there that haven't necessarily gone through the certification process. I'd certainly be happy to pitch them on why it's a good idea, but, it's not necessarily the right thing for every company. But being evaluated on how companies actually really interact with their communities, and not just are they philanthropic, being philanthropic is a wonderful thing, but organizations, you know, a company that is that has a lot of really bad environmental byproducts, if they're dumping toxic waste but they give a lot of money to the local opera, it's great that they're giving a lot of money to the local opera, but people increasingly care about what are the core operations of this business and are they doing things in a way that actually creates some community benefit, both social and environmental, in the communities in which they operate.
And isn't that the additional benefit brought by a certification process like green nonprofits, in that they then have the ability to show a body of work, to show that they have taken action, as opposed to just making the statement?
Absolutely. And, I, as much as I would advocate the B Corp process for for-profits, I would advocate the green nonprofits process for nonprofits for two reasons. One is being able to point to a third-party for certification. It's an objective vetting process. You know, I can sit here and say Philantech is a great company. If I don't actually have anything to back that up, you know, you may believe me because I'm a trustworthy person. You may not. But if I have something to back that up in the form of a third party that is objectively measuring an objective set of criteria, that provides a lot more credibility. Similarly with the Green Nonprofit Certification, another benefit, I think, of the B Corp process and going through what they call an impact assessment, which is the same notion as going through the certification process to be a green nonprofit, is, you know, if your organization isn't quite ready to become a B Corporation yet, or you're thinking about, or similarly, not quite ready to become a certified green nonprofit, there are ways that you can learn about what some of the best practices are that will make you a green nonprofit, and you can start gradually putting those things in place so that you'll ultimately be ready to be certified down the road.
Right. And that process of starting the dialogue, particularly internal to your organization, is one of the most important first steps, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, frequently it's one person within an organization, whether it's for-profit or non-profit, who is just a champion for things green. You know, it could be somebody who comes from an environmental organization and has that kind of background. It could be somebody who really has great environmental practices in their personal life. It could just be somebody who really cares about the environment. One person being charged up about something and moving an organization can frequently be two different things. So whether it's going through the B Corp process or going through the Green Nonprofits process, I think the first step is really understanding where your organization is. I mean, the first step is wanting to change, wanting to be a responsible organization, wanting to be a green organization, and then figuring out where your organization is, what steps need to be taken in order to get you from where you are now to where you want to be in terms of that third-party validation. But really more importantly, in terms of building in the practices internally that will be consistent with your values and consistent with whatever environmental mission you may have as either a for-profit or a nonprofit.
Well, let's talk about where values comes into this, because you are saying that it's a fairly different value statement if you're moving in the direction of being a green nonprofit or a B corporation than simply just even a successful organization.
I think it is very much. You know, I think there are ways that organizations are measured and evaluated, and they're frequently external. You know, in the for-profit world, it's, you know, are you making a lot of money? Are your products well-liked? In the nonprofit world, it's are your services well-liked and well-used? You know, are you sustainable in terms of financial sustainability? You know, a lot of organizations that are doing really, really great work in the nonprofit sector haven't necessarily taken that internal look to see what they're doing with their internal office practices, with their telecommuting practices, with other things that can actually have an impact on their local economies. So I think it is definitely making a statement about who you are as an organization, what you want to be, the legacy that you want to have as an organization, how you want to be seen, but also really the ways that you want to be able to interact with your communities, and communities kind of broadly defined, you know, in terms of your customer base, your constituents and your donors if you're a nonprofit. But your constituents may be different from the local community around your office or around wherever your operations are. So really thinking kind of inclusively about what kind of statement you want to make as an organization and fundamentally who you want to be as an organization.
And the message to your donors, your community, your board of directors, it sort of sets the stage for a broader discussion.
Absolutely. You know, and that can start at any level in the organization. You know, if frequently nonprofits will do things that are kind of mandated by the board or mandated by a funder, something like becoming a greener organization can be initiated by really anybody in the organization who cares about it. And there are some really good practices in just thinking about how to move your organization through kind of an evolutionary process to get from where you are now to where you want to be. It's easier in some organizations than others.
And most people would tell you that it probably does need an advocate. There needs to be someone who understands, listens to a show like this, understands what a company like yours is doing or a green nonprofit is doing, and becomes an advocate for their own organization.
Absolutely. So having an advocate or a champion is absolutely a critical component, and particularly for an organization of any size, having more than one champion or advocate is critically important as well. So that could be the one person who listens to this show and has been listening to the show for a while and is really jazzed about greening their organization, can sort of look around their organization and see who might be a likely ally, who else might be interested in starting to put some of these practices into place, and essentially try to recruit that person, get them on board with whatever greening initiatives you think that you may want to pursue with your organization. If you're not at a C level or, you know, an executive director level or a director level in your organization, trying to get somebody on your side, trying to recruit an advocate who is somebody who's in a decision-making position, if you're not, is certainly helpful. But also looking more informally to see who the other influencers are in your organization. You know, there may be Joe who tells great stories at the water cooler and everybody will follow him to whatever he does. He may not have a position of formal authority in the organization, but if people will listen to him, he's the kind of person that you want to get on your side if you're...
Right. You can be sort of the catalyst, but then start finding people who can help you make your case.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, any sort of change initiative that you're looking to undertake in an organization, whether it's in the, I talk a reasonable bit about change management for implementing new technology products, and ours in particular, but more broadly as well, you know, greening your organization is also to a degree a change management process. And some of that is about trying to change individual behaviors. If it's something as simple as, you know, recycle your paper, recycle the plastic and glass that you're using in the organization. Some of the changes that you're looking to implement may be much, much broader than that. So really one of the first keys is actually understanding your organizational dynamic, how decisions are made, how change happens, how evolution happens, how policies and processes get put into place. Really knowing who the key decision makers and key catalysts are in your organization, you may be one of those people, which is fantastic. You'll be in a great position to lead this type of initiative. If you're not, figure out who those people are and befriend them and get them on your side.
Yeah. We have a quick reminder for our listeners today, and then when we come back, I was hoping that we might take a couple moments for you to share with our listeners today that you did write a chapter about managing change for N10's Managing Technology to Meet Your Mission book, and we were hoping that you'll give us some insight into that chapter, and we'll be right back.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
Now, it's certainly here on this show, we're keenly interested in the topic of managing technology to meet your mission. So can you tell us a little bit about your particular voice in N10's book?
Sure, I'd be happy to, and I'll just take the opportunity to plug the book as well. It's a book called Managing Technology to Meet Your Mission that was published, was edited by N10, just the kind of industry association for nonprofit technology, published by Wiley in 2009, and there are some great voices in it. The chapter that I wrote was specifically about managing change, and I think it's actually really applicable to green initiatives as it is to technology, whether the green initiative has a technology component or not. Generally speaking, people don't like change. You know, we tend to not like it in our personal lives. We tend to not like it in our organizational lives. There are certainly some exceptions. But particularly changes over which we don't feel like we have control tend to meet with some resistance and meet with some anxiety. So there's some really good practices around, first of all, just understanding that changes tend to be met with some anxiety and potentially some resistance. And to really be strategic in approaching whatever initiative it is that you're trying to affect in your organization, again, whether it's a green initiative, a technology initiative, or both, to understand who the individuals are in the organization, that any change within the organization may be an organizational change, but it's impacting those individuals. They may have very different reactions. Figuring out who your key allies are likely to be, who may be resistant to the change for whatever reason. I like to talk about 4 C's of leading a change initiative. Those 4 C's are credibility, common ground for goals, a compelling case, and connecting emotionally. And, you know, to be able to successfully lead a change initiative, again, whether it's a tech change or a greening change in your organization, it helps to have some formal authority. If you're a board member, if you're an ED, if you're a vice president, having some formal authority in your organization certainly helps. When you say to do things, people are a little bit more likely to listen. But it's not necessary to be an advocate for things like green initiatives in your organizations. And there are ways that you can build your credibility, particularly if you're really advocating for greening your organization. Start small, but position yourself so that you're really a resource for other people who are interested in environmental things in your organization, regardless of whether or not that's the mission that your organization is pursuing. Really work on building your relationships within your organization. Make sure that whatever it is that you're pursuing is really tied to your mission. And for nonprofits, that's of critical importance. You know, nonprofits make so many decisions that are about, can I better meet the needs of my constituents? Can I support my donors? What is it that we're doing in our daily activities in implementing a new technology, whether it's a grants management system, a donor management system, whether it's a SharePoint to share documents, whatever the case may be, the technology itself has to be something that's in service of the organization's mission. From a greening perspective, looking at a green initiative that will help the organization, if there are things that can be directly tied to the organization's mission, that's fantastic. But greening is a good unto itself and a way to demonstrate to your donors that you care about the environment. It's a way to demonstrate to your constituents that you care about the community. And it's a way, generally speaking, to engage more positively with whatever the mission is that you're trying to pursue as an organization.
So say an executive director wanted to create change. That this is the direction they want to go in. They want the organization to become more green. Is it generally your expectation that the process is going to go through finding common ground and consensus on that topic, or that you would advise executive directors who feel that this is the right thing to do should use their position to establish that goal?
I almost never advocate for a bully pulpit, but executive directors are definitely in more of a position to set direction. And, you know, in thinking about creating common ground, the way that I like to think about common ground is not necessarily in terms of consensus building, but in two things. One is giving people an opportunity to have a seat at the table so that people don't feel like change is sort of being forced down their throats, but they feel like their voice is heard. That's one of the key factors in helping to overcome some of the resistance and anxiety in any sort of change management process. So even if the decision's been made by the executive director, rather than sitting down at a staff meeting and saying, hey, we're doing this, sit down at a staff meeting and say, hey, we're thinking about this. I would love to get input from all of you. And it's not necessarily practical to get input from everybody, so depending on the size of the organization and the processes in place, maybe there's a committee that can be set up so that everybody can talk to one person who can then convey that message to the ED. The other facet of common ground is really about understanding that whatever it is that you're pursuing, or really just understanding why you're pursuing whatever it is that you're pursuing, whether it's to become a more environmentally responsible organization, whether it's to find a facet of technology that can help you be more efficient in meeting your mission, clearly conveying that, the sort of the communicate early and often idea, lets people know why you're making the decisions that you're making. Helps to get them on board. One of the things that we find time and again when people who are leading change get input from people around the organization is that people in unexpected places may have the best ideas. So providing venues for somebody who may be, you know, kind of operating on the line and really working with the end user or the constituents who are receiving the services, getting input from those folks can be a really amazing way to find out about what some of the needs of the organization are that the ED may actually not know. So
while you have the initiative and the idea, this may be the opportunity for you to learn more about the creativity of your own team by opening the process up.
Absolutely, and sometimes come up with great ideas, sometimes come up with money-saving ideas, sometimes come up with better ways of doing things. And at the very least, give people an opportunity to feel like their voices are being heard, which really helps to create buy-in for the process. If I, as an employee, can feel like my opinion is valued and my opinion was valued before I was told what to do, it really helps engender buy-in. It also helps people just feel like they're respected by their organizations. So getting that kind of input relatively early in the process is a great way to go.
It's always amazing to me how fast this show goes, and you've covered so much territory for us. Can you please make sure that our listeners today know how to reach you?
Oh, that would be wonderful. So the company is Philantech. Our URL is philantech.com. That's philantech.com.
That's terrific. And a phone number if someone needs to call. information?
Sure. So our phone number is 888-PT-GRANT. So it's 888-784-7268.
That's terrific. Thank you so much for being our guest here on the Nonprofit Coach, a special edition of The Green Show. All of our shows are podcast immediately following the show. Over 70 podcasts are available at tedhart.com. Click on radio links, and we will have another special edition next month. The Nonprofit Coach is on hiatus for 2 weeks, and then we'll be back in its full Tuesday session in early February. So thank you all for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach. We'll see you real soon.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcast at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.